The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Why are we talking?
I have a deal for you. You receive full pardon for every criminal action you've committed in the United States. It was an accident. About an hour ago, a small jet went down inside New York City. The president was on board.
President of what?
It's not funny, Plissken.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it.
Welcome to the NecroCasticon.
And I want to say this to the television audience. I made my mistakes. But in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service. I've earned every cent because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
Hello, welcome to Volume 2, Chapter 38 of the NecroCasticon, Project Entertainment Network's podcast that blends horror and heavy metal properties with the comic connection. I'm your host, writer, and podcaster, Token Tom Clark. And with me, as always, is our panel of horror and metal experts over at Project Entertainment Network. He's going to filibuster us tonight, musician Max Axe.
Ask not what your metal can do for you. Ask what you can do for your metal.
That's right. We got Uber Fanboy smoking Walt. Hades, what's in the smoker, Walt?
Can't you say you believe in me? Can't you say what it means to me?
Oh, that sounds like Boston.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
yeah, it does.
God.
Boston, what?
And musician and artist, Azrael Mordecai.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here. How are you?
I'm good, but we're busting our rule about not talking about politics on this show this week because we're talking about politics in horror and metal. Somewhat inspired by Tom Araya's Twitter account this week. Somewhat inspired by Three Guys with Beards, one of the other podcasts that I produce over at Project Entertainment Network, and the fact that they broke their rule of no politics this week as well.
Well, we're not really talking politics in general. We're talking about
right.
them, like you said, specifically as it pertains to horror and metal. So right. we're not talking about, you know, the election and all that fun stuff, folks. So don't worry about it.
We're going to discuss the Republican boycotts and Slayer albums that are holding back their sales in South America.
And oh, absolutely.
We're going to discuss how Blood Diamonds are affecting the sales of Mastodon's latest release. And then we're going to finish off with a talk about whether or not global warming has really affected Courtney Love's voice.
I don't think that's responsible for that.
Well, we needed something in the horror vein.
No, these are alternative facts you're hard. Giving.
Hashtag alternative facts.
Yes, good one, Oz.
I put that up this week. Like Eddie Vedder was the lead singer of Pearl Jam. That's an alternative fact.
Yes. Walt is reviewing
Soundgarden, Rusty Cage.
Bill and Phil, Songs of Darkness and Despair. Oz is going to run to the hills with Steven Seagal's down in the mortuary. And, of course, Max Axe and Revelation 13 bring us This Week in Metal and Horror History. This is the point where I'm going to remind you that you can sponsor the NecroCasticon or any of the Project any of the Project Entertainment Network podcasts. Holy shit. All you got to do is email ArmandRosamelia@gmail.com or go to our website, projectentertainment.com, and click on the tab that says Advertise.
Tom's brain defaulted to its last system restore point, which was apparently about 5 months ago.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Needs a reboot.
Well, all day long I've been listening to the Brian Keene 100th episode of the horror show Live Telethon with the proceeds that, of course, benefit Scares That Care. So I've been kind of podcasted out today, not to mention that I also this afternoon recorded the latest episode of our sister podcast, The Curtain Jerkers. So yeah.
I totally love that bit where Mario was being interviewed on there, and he said, you know, George Bush does not care about nerd people. I thought that was just a great statement.
All right. Anyway, you can email Armand, you can advertise with us and be just like Subculture Course that's here down in Jacksonville, Florida.
Hey, Necrocaster fans, looking for something out of the box to wear? Then visit subculturecorsets.com. Subculture Corsets and Clothing carries all the unusual clothing and accessory brands for the steampunk, gothic, apocalypse, rockabilly, and pinup scenes. Or perhaps you're into the Victorian goth. Whatever you freaks are into, most likely Subculture Corsets and Clothing will have something for you. If you're a curvy lady, Subculture offers sizes 4 through 4X and men's clothing as well, so no excuses. Visit subculturecorsets.com now for the new exciting piece. Or visit their store at the Avenues Mall in Jacksonville, Florida, located a half mile off Interstate I-95. When checking out at Subculture's website, use the discount code NecroCasticon for 10% off your entire order. That's subculturecorsets.com. Discount code NecroCasticon. Check them out now.
If you don't have a business with an internet presence, you want to help us out anyway, you can do so on Patreon, www.patreon.com/projectentnet. That's E-N-T-N-E-T after word project. All right. And for as little as $1 a month, you can help support our server costs and get something free in return.
And remember, that's a minimum, folks. $1 is the minimum. You can do 5, 10, 20. The more you give, the more you get. It's not giving away anything for nothing, okay? You can get stuff back.
Mm-hmm. Remember, when we hit that final goal, we're going to change our name to Skynet. Shit's going to get real.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
What to live.
Get to the chopper.
If your podcasting outlet allows you to rank, rate, or otherwise comment on our show, please do so. We'd love to get your feedback. And please subscribe. Come right to your mobile device every time we put a new show out, every Monday. Social media as well. Follow us there. We're the Necrocasticon on Facebook, at Necrocasticon on Twitter, and Necrocasticon on the Instagram. Oh, I am at TokenBottom_Tom on Twitter, TheTokenTom on Facebook. What about you, Max?
I am at TheMaxX on Twitter and TheMaxX on Instagram as well.
Walter?
You can find me on Twitter at YourWaltHades, and you can find me on Instagram at Smokin_Walt_Hades. And you can also watch and follow my film watching challenge of 2017, 365 movies in 365 days. Just on Facebook, enter that in the search engine, click on the link with Gene Wilder on it, and like and follow.
Yeah, and we will touch on the horror that you hit on that this week when we get to the smoker later.
Yeah.
Okay, well, one of them, I thought at first was a remake of a Vanna White movie, but it turned out it wasn't, so.
Nope. Fuck no.
And where can people find you, Azrael?
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, LODBNR, all that stuff by looking for Azrael Mordecai or Glishart. Or you can find me on Grindr by looking for Yahoo McSloppy now.
Okay. Nice.
That's his second name.
Oh, wow. So this week we're getting political, like we said, but we're just talking about the political overtones more than political opinions. Our political opinions, we don't care about them individually, and you guys don't either, so we're not going to talk about them.
Exactly.
And quite honestly, and especially, and we'll start off with the horror fiction portion of this, politicians in general are dumb and do stupid things that are the perfect plot MacGuffins, and most horror fiction. From the Crazy General and Dr. Strangelove, on down to the doctors that made Captain Trips in The Stand. Yeah.
Can't forget even fucking The Omen. You know, the dad was a fucking ambassador.
And it's great that you mentioned that, Oz, because that's the first movie that we want to talk about here. Because The Omen is such a multi-layered film. And, again, from the beginning of that with the father being the ambassador to Italy, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Or some kind of a dignitary in that,
yes,
that sort of thing.
Right, yeah. Right. And then ending, actually this follows to the entire Omen series of films.
Yep.
There's
a political theme to it, yeah.
Right, and again, it's a reflection of what's going on in our world, or was going on in our world at that time, which ends up being timeless because that shit's still happening. And David Seltzer's book and screenplay for the original movie is terrifying. Again, I saw this on HBO when I was a young boy. And it really scared the living fucking bejesus out of me. And I can't watch that movie to this day without getting the creepies. Now, another film series that's been really good at parodying or satiring our current state of unrest in this world is the Purge films.
Yes.
Now, well, I have
pretty much satirical.
Right. I have not been blessed with seeing any of these movies. So, Walter, I'm going to turn the podium over to you and Osriel right now because I know you guys have seen these.
Okay. Well, I have not seen the most recent one, the Election Day one. I did see the first two.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah, so I can't comment on the most recent one. They're not bad movies. I don't find them scary. I find the thought and the philosophy going into the movies kind of scary. Like if some of that were to really happen, which of course is over the top ridiculous. What happens is to help clean up the streets and maintain moral control.
It's kind of a modern day take on Shirley Jackson's The Lottery.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yep. Yeah,
for 24 hours, all crime is legal. Or not 24 hours.
24 hours.
Is it 24 hours? Oh, okay. Yep. All right.
Yeah, again, good fiction is metaphor for the current world and for current social issues and for current political issues. And a couple of chapters ago, We were talking about movies like The Day the Earth Stood Still and John Carpenter's The Thing. These are great Cold War era stories.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers is another perfect example.
Yep.
McCarthy era stuff too. Cold War as well, but very much into the McCarthy era.
The paranoia,
completely politically charged.
Fear. Yeah, the fear.
The paranoia and the fear of that of the commies back then, quote unquote, was again perfect plot MacGuffins. For science fiction, because it's in science fiction and horror, what you do is you take something that is naturally scary, or the thing that scares you naturally, and make it into a supernatural or otherworldly or preternatural device. You're afraid of nature, so you have the grizzly bear that is the antagonist in Day of the Grizzly, for example.
May I interject?
Yes.
Horror is something that, if you look at history, it doesn't do well when everybody is happy and the economy is doing well. You look at the 90s, for example, which is probably our most recent period of economic prosperity, and horror was literally grasping at straws for the next thing. It had no identity in the 90s.
Thank God for Scream.
Scream is part of the reason it had no identity. In terms of the overall modus operandi of people within the genre, but the greater ebb and flow of things was, horror is a reflection of the things around you. And when you have a lot of stress, horror is an outlet where you have this safe zone where you can see these terrors and you can experience them with this voyeuristic sense without being directly at risk. The historical precedent I like to point out is, I forget which movie it was of the Universal movies, but one of them was supposed to open on December 8th when Pearl Harbor was bombed. And they debated whether or not to release the movie, and they did release it, expecting that nobody would come. And what actually happened is it was a fucking blockbuster seller that
I
week.
Think it was the Wolfman.
You may be right. 40, that would have been what, 43?
41.
41.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, it's that reaction. You have a lot of people all of a sudden very terrified. They've experienced something for the first time that they've never experienced. At least not on that kind of a scale. And they flock to something that is a fantasy outlet. You look at the Reagan period with that whole, the
Cold War,
part of the Cold War, and the just the economic disparity. New York City, in any 80s movie was like hell, right down to the point that you had movies like Escape from New York and The Warriors that were just basically built on this premise of this place is no man's land, because you know, that was the reflection of the fears we had, poverty, you know, the drugs, the HIV epidemic, all these things. Every time there's a new demon, you have this new push in horror.
And staying in line with that one, and staying in New York as well, when 9/11 occurred, out of that you had movies seeing success like The Ring, The Others. Yep. The Others saw a lot of success because of 9/11.
Hostile.
And you remember, I know you've read Dawn's
28 Days Later. The zombie craze that is current in this country started because of 9/11.
Really started to blow up there, too. Yeah. Well, it was also a reflection. Art is always a reflection of society. And what a lot of people listening to this episode, this chapter, is going to realize is that politics in horror is not as in your face as it would be for, say, an action movie. The politics is a lot more subliminal. And it's more used as a subplot or a warning or a fable or a story or a lesson to be learned at the end of the movie. All the things we just talked about, like The Day the Earth Stood Still and Body Invasion of the Body Snatchers from the early 60s and the fear and the paranoia of communism was being manifested and demonstrated in a different way. It's just taking that same fear and projecting it in a different fashion.
A good example of what you're saying there is Night of the Living Dead, which is
perfect example.
A movie that has a political undertone. You do have this give and take between the white guy and the black guy. I'm just breaking it down to simple terms. And it's not in your face, but they have several exchanges that build up this subtext in their exchanges. And, you know, you can look at it in a bunch of different ways. You can look at it in the fact that you had an African-American in a lead role for the first time in a major movie. But you can also look at it from the fact that, well, that is progressive. You can also look at it from the fact that the racist white guy was right. So depending on which side of the SWJ, you know, fucking fence you want to sit on.
You belong, yeah.
Yeah, and you can stab at that either way. But the point is there is this attempt to have a dialogue delivered with this vocab, you know, with the lines.
And with that movie, not just the black versus white aspect of it in the high racial tensions of the 60s, but also the aftermath of World War II using the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. There was all this talk now of what about the radiation? What about the after effects? What do we not know about this? And that
Godzilla
is another subplot.
And the bug-eyed monsters.
That's right there. Yeah, yep. It's also in Night of the Living Dead because the radiation from the probe coming back from space is what they're kind of alluding to bring the dead back to life. That, again, is demonstrating the unknown, the paranoia. Like, what would happen if
and
we use this weapon again?
It ties to my reference earlier to Danse Macabre from Stephen King, because he tells this really great story where he recalls sitting in a movie theater watching, you know, like Robot Monster or something, and they stopped the movie to come out, and the owner of the theater sat on the stage and made an announcement that the Russians had put Sputnik into space. Mm-hmm. And this was terrifying to him and to a lot of people at that time.
To people nowadays, it's like, not a big deal. But this was huge for that time period. All that fear, that paranoia, it's political, but it's subliminal. It's an underpinning. It's there, but
it's
not as
in your face. It doesn't work.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's that simple. If Night of the Living Dead had, you know, broken down to, you know, somebody calling somebody the N-word, you know, the subtext and the tension in that movie would have been just done there, because at that point it becomes, you know, more of a statement. You know, Dawn of the Dead is an example of commercialism in society. You know, but if somebody outright said something to that effect, it would have been out the window, too ham-fisted. You know, in a horror, it's always got to be something that gets under your skin, like the best horror period. You know, it gets under your skin and it looks for the raw nerve and it pulls at it. You know, if that raw nerve is that you feel repressed, you feel like you can't get anywhere in society, if you feel like you can be invaded tomorrow, if you're afraid of terrorists, you know, whatever that fear is, it looks for those nerves and it pulls on. And it works best when it's not making a point to say, I'm looking for this nerve.
horror is a safe outlet for you to release the stress of the fears that you have. Mm-hmm. And the controlled atmosphere. And when you have political fears, there's no better way to do it than through a medium like film or the written page. Or, in this case, also music. And we're going to take a brief break, check out some of the new podcasts over at Project Entertainment Network. And when we come back, we're going to talk about music that's politically charged, especially of the metal vein.
Every person's story has something to teach us. How others view life, how obstacles are overcome, how joy is felt, how fears are faced, how love is expressed. The Matters of Faith podcast explores individual stories of people's lives and how faith plays a part. It may not be your story, but it may help shape yours.
The Matters of Faith podcast with Jay Wilburn is on Project Entertainment Network.
Hey, friends, this is Andrew Sensenig from We Are Still Here and Powers the Series, and you are listening to Necrocasticon.
Once upon a time, a madman, poet, and thief known as John Urbansick, that's me, challenged himself, myself, to write a story a day, every day, for a year, by hand. Some of them worked. Some of them failed. Some of them were spectacular. Then I did it again. Join me every week for Ink Stains as I do it a third time. And I will read you some of these stories. I'll talk about the process, about creativity in general, writing in specific, and maybe I can help ignite your artistic adventures.
Hey, this is Brent Sims, writer-director, and you are listening to the Necrocasticon.
How do people who make stuff up for a living make stuff up?
New York Times bestseller Jonathan Mayberry told us.
Oprah's book club favorite Sue Miller told us.
You know, you sort of take a character and make some bad things happen.
How'd we get them to do that?
We colored them, just like at a cocktail party, except through your headphones.
Join us every Thursday for the Liars Club Oddcast.
A slightly unhinged podcast where storytellers interview other storytellers.
Available on Project Entertainment Network, iTunes, and everywhere podcasts are heard.
All right, political metal, it's fucking everywhere, and
oh, it's all over the place.
Yeah,
how about we just name this section Rage Against the Machine?
Yes,
pretty much.
Just call it Iced Earth, you know.
Iced Earth is quite political, not the political aspirations many believe in, but you know.
So Tom Araya came out this week as a questionably unabated supporter of Donald Trump, allegedly supporting Mike Pence's views on turning fruits into vegetables. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you believe that, fine. Just leave it. Keep it to your fucking self.
Well, here's the thing that concerns me. I think people are reading into this wrong. I think he's just pulling people's legs. Because King is a motherfucking liberal from way back. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he would condone the official Slayer Twitter handle doing that.
Slayer came out and said that they have, as a group, have no affiliation whatsoever. So they come as a band, they say that. Tom Araya is going to say what he wants to say on his own. Which didn't he retract it later on?
No.
Or am I okay? I'm thinking somebody
he
else.
He made it worse.
The comment about the Confucian Derby? Yeah. Yeah, he did retract. He did somewhat retract it.
Oh, he did. Oh, okay.
Somewhat.
Somewhat. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had this issue.
He said the comments he made regarding it were in jest.
Ah, okay.
Okay. Now, that's one thing, being political that way. I don't want you to be political that way.
Mm-mm.
I want your music to be political. Because you may have a viewpoint, like many of the heavy metal musicians that Oz and I know in Central New York are very right-wing conservative. Mm-hmm. For some fucking reason. All right? I don't know what it is, but a lot of them are. Especially in the original music metal bands.
It's the cold weather and the beer.
Can you have an explanation for it, Oz? Because I don't.
I It's probably got to do with something with the very clicky nature of this area, you know. But you know, I've been in a situation similar to that, you know, where I was in a band with somebody who loved to attack people over religion and politics, you know, and it's like hard to get across that, you know, that shit reflects on everybody in the band, especially when your fucking name is in the band's name, you know, it's when you're ostensibly making these statements, you know, and I've got people fucking, you know, coming after me, like I had said these things, and it's like, you know, anybody who knows me knows that the things that I avoid discussing vehemently are politics and religion.
Right.
I will delete any comments off my page. I will fucking delete you. I don't fucking care if you're my fucking mother. If you want to have this discussion, go somewhere else. That's not what my page is for. That's not me.
Exactly.
And anybody who knows me knows that that's not an area I care to get into, because my opinion is, if you want to discuss politics, then you should be sitting down reading books on politics. You should know the law. You should be studying the bills. Not a fucking Twitter page, a Daily Mail article, not fucking Google, not Yahoo fucking News. Those aren't sources of knowledge.
Fake news.
I wouldn't fucking pull up an article about the Large Hadron Collider and then assume that I can sit there and fucking carry on a conversation with some fucking Swedish fucking scientist about, you know, fucking particle physics, you know?
They become guilty by association. What the fuck he...
All right, we're getting derailed here and getting angry. Because politics is very polarizing in this country right now as a whole. All right?
It becomes a passionate discussion. And, as I just said, you don't want to talk about it because it gets you all fucking riled up about it, and you don't want to be like that.
So there's too many people right now who are recreationally outraged. Mm-hmm. It is a pastime to find things to be. I just saw a quick aside, a fucking news article where somebody on fucking some major news website is accusing Super Mario Run, the video game for children, of being sexist.
Why? What's wrong with
Because Mario with saves a princess and because there's a toadette, a female toadstool, waving race flags like the character from Grease. This is sexist. Anybody played a fucking Mario game knows that the heart of them is Mario saving the fucking princess. That is the fucking story. And if you want to be a fucking dick about it, there's Super fucking Peach or whatever it is, where the roles are reversed and Princess saving fucking, you know, Peach is saving Mario. People just are looking for things that people enjoy and then finding a reason to be outraged about something in that context.
But a good thing you need to do is take that anger and
just write a song
through and write us and process it through an art form and write a song, create a band and put it out there.
If it's a good song and if it's a good piece of art, regardless of somebody's political inclinations, whether they're left, right, in the middle, upside down, inside out, don't give a fuck.
Or Ted Nugent.
He's
in his own category.
Crazy. Oh, yeah. All right. If it's a good piece of art, somebody from the left's going to find something in that song that appeals to them. Somebody from the right's going to find something in that song that appeals to them. Somebody in the middle is going to find something in that piece of art that appeals to them. And there's great songs like that. Peace sells, but who's buying from Megadeth? Oh, my fucking God.
Perfect example.
Mm-hmm. You know, another good example is one that was actually used on the campaign, and it's not one that's a directly a metal song. But Donald Trump was using the Rolling Stones, "You Can't Always Get What You Want," despite the fact that the Stones were vocally non-supporters of his, you know, but it shows that both sides of the political aisle can find something, you know, in each other that they like.
Absolutely.
Well, not so much in the Stones end of things. But,
yeah. And getting back to Megadeth there, I mean, Peace Sells But Who's Buying is not just their only political anthem. It's probably one of their biggest, most popular
Rust
ones.
Rust in Peace is also heavily.
Rust in Peace. There's plenty of songs off the Countdown to Extinction album.
So far, so good, so what?
Yeah, exactly. There's all kinds of stuff like that.
Anarchy in the USA.
Dave likes to hit on a couple of key themes. You know, he hits on a little bit of self-introspection. He hits on a little bit of world experience. And then he hits on politics. Yep. You know, those are like the three...
And comic books. And sometimes they cross over, too, because Holy War's Punishment Due, if you are a person that's not in the know and just go into that song listening to it, to you it's a song about a guy that goes overseas and fights in the war and comes back home and everything's all fucked up for him. Okay? It's a political song in that measure. But in reality, the song is about two superheroes. One's a Punisher and the other's fucking Deathlok. You know? So...
You know, it kind of goes back to the, you know, the whole taking what you get from it, you know, seeing, you know, something in it based on your own view. You know, what you're looking for is what you're going to find.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Every time.
The infamous...
only from the good art.
Well, like the infamous moment from the PMRC hearings when Dee Snider was grilled about...
That's exactly what I was thinking about.
About the song, yeah, the... oh, God, what's the name of it? So Under the Knife. Yep. It's about a throat operation, and they thought it was about sadomasochism and bondage, and he stated...
he's that, like, I want to know what's going on in Tipper Gore.
Tipper Gore, she was looking for sadomasochism and bondage, and she found it. Someone who was looking for surgical references would have found those, and bam!
That's
like,
exactly
screw
it.
You, Al Gore. So, yeah. And right with Megadeth, we have to swing the other way to Metallica and the Come On and Justice for All.
Justice for All, yeah.
Oh, which, yeah.
Despite all the mixing issues I've held for years, is their pinnacle album, it pains me to say because Cliff's not on it, but you know, just in terms of writing, lyrics, content, quality, you know, overall songs, there isn't a clunker on that album. That album is phenomenal, and you know, it shows that for a minute James Hetfield was very, very in tune with, you know, I don't know if you could say himself, but definitely very in tune with the world around him, because that's very reflective of the period that it, you know, it comes from, that early 90s sort of uncertain period.
It was also the fact that his perception of the world had increased, because you only can live and exist in the world that you are around. And once you are able to see much more of the world, your perception grows. And that by that time, Metallica had become a worldwide band. They had toured Japan. They were able to tour all in England and so forth. So we got to see a lot more of the world and see a lot more screwed up stuff. And that only increases an artist's bag of tricks, if you will, what they can pull from to create.
And that's what brings my piece to the table here, is somebody that lived in a place that was war-torn. And that's Gary Moore. Much of his early metal...
Oh, I thought you were about to say you lived in, like, Beirut or something.
No. Much of his early metal, his solo stuff, is very much influenced by the English-Irish War. And with songs like Out in the Field, the entire After the War album, it's pretty much all songs about the war. His Victims of the Future album, right there. And his biggest song is his intro song, The End of the World, songs about nuclear annihilation.
Yep.
You know, the Cold War, heavily sitting on the Victims of the Future. Then there's the song Terror in the Skies, about the airliner that was shot down by the Russians. You know, it's... These people, they live it and they express it so well in music. Now, Iced Earth, Walt, let's talk about them.
Well, honestly, despite the fact of Iced Earth's political affiliations are John Schaefer is a front four Tea Party member, he really does not throw a lot of political aspirations in their music. I mean, hard to believe. They're very patriotic. I mean, they're the one album they did, The Glorious Burden, which covers famous American battles, you know, that emphasizes that. But for the most part, though, they really don't spew their political aspirations in every one of their albums. They'd rather sing about Dungeons and Dragons and horror films and dystopian futuristic societies and shit like that.
You know why?
However, John Schaefer does have a side project called Sons of Liberty. That's where he shoots out his Tea Party madness at you.
Because he understands, the same as Dave Mustaine, the same as James Hetfield, and even Gary Moore,
that there's a time and place to talk about politics, and sometimes it's not in your bread and butter.
Yep.
Yep.
I'd like to play devil's advocate and mention a band that doesn't actually get a lot of love on this show, which is System of a Down's Toxicity album. It's very heavily politically charged.
They're an extremely political band. It's a very good example. Very good example.
That's the only album from them that I personally enjoy. But, you know, I'm not discrediting the band. It's just not my style for the most part.
Fans either, you know, but it's a very good example.
Yeah, when you have lightning in a bottle, you know, you got to appreciate it. And that's a really solid album all the way around. But it does, the thing I appreciate about it is it's not focused on one political target. I think that's something like Rage Against the Machine tends to focus on, you know, one issue. Whereas System of a Down is talking about everything, you know, from starving kids to fucking terrorists in the skies to, you know, they're more
well-rounded.
Yeah, it's not so much coming from a right-wing point of view or a left-wing point of view so much as it's, this is wrong and why is this happening? And I appreciate that more
and
than...
They grew up around that. Where are they from again? Syria?
I believe Syria or Lebanon?
Yeah.
That area.
Grew up with the fucking bombs going off and the AKs going off. Same as Gary Moore.
Yeah.
At least Gary Moore could have a fucking job and go to church. If he lives over in Lebanon and Syria, fuck that.
Oh, just getting through the day is a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to present my contribution here. And mine actually delves not so much in the politics of American-style politics, but politics internationally. And this comes from a band called Sepultura off their Chaos AD album, which you can say is very politically influenced. It's a song that, thanks to this song, I have this date in my head, and I will never forget this date. The date is Friday, October 2nd, 1992, and the song is called Manifest. And basically, this song, it's not a song. It's a vocal, almost a spoken word, if you will, describing a massacre that the police implemented in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, where they wiped out an entire prison's population of prisoners. The massacre was took place at a place called Pavilion Nove, which means Pavilion Number 9. Basically, all the police just went in there and just killed everybody, wiped them all out for no reason other than overpopulation. The way this song is produced is so visceral because the music is brutal in and of itself. But Max Cavalera uses this heavy distortion, and the vocal is not very compressed, so it's not very clear. It's almost like an echo in the back of your head where you listen to it through headphones. It paints such a scary scene, almost liken it to Angel of Death. The weird, really sick thing, like both those songs are influenced by real activity, and it just brings a whole new perspective once again to somebody who's never been to Brazil, never been to Sao Paulo, probably never will, but hears about what people actually live with. Like we were just talking about with System of a Down, growing up in the Middle East and either Syria, Lebanon, wherever it may be, just getting through one day and surviving is a massive accomplishment where some of us just can't even feel like they can get out of bed in the morning. You know, it's there's a whole different world out there. And songs like this, Manifest from the Chaos AD album, present a whole new perspective to it to tell you what kind of real political shit is going on out there.
What you were saying about the massacre reminds me of a fairly well-known story about Vlad the Impaler.
Mm-hmm.
In Romania, he invited all of the sick and hungry people to a big feast, and
to
he
the
fed
palace.
Them all. Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't the palace because for reasons.
right. Sorry.
He invited them to this big banquet hall, and he fed them all like kings. And while they were eating, he had every window and door boarded up. And the place was torched to the ground. And he said, "I have eliminated sickness, poverty, and homelessness in my realm."
you know, let's see how far that got you.
Yeah, but you know what? But my point here is that it's a matter of perspective, though, because in Romania today, they still don't take well if you speak ill of Vlad, because he's still considered a great ruler. You know what I mean? It's that cultural perspective thing, you know? You've heard the arguments that, you know, Iraq and Libya were more stable when they were run by ruthless Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi, you know?
Yeah.
It's that matter of perspective. And to tie this into something horror-related, you know, it like on The Walking Dead, you know, you got to have a guy like Negan keeping track of all these dirtbag saviors. You know, you got to have somebody ruthless.
You got to have the governor. Specific political
That's completely different.
You got to have somebody who's going to put the Turks on pikes for you every now and then, too, you know. Mm-hmm.
So. You know, it's that dichotomy of you want somebody who's going to do good things. But do you care if they do good things in the vilest way possible?
Yeah, that's why people
voted for Trump.
Who knows? People were drunk, you know, or stoned or both that day.
You could even drop the A-bomb here and mention Adolf. You know, I mean, it's that same concept. You know, we want good things for our country so badly that we're going to overlook the fact that it requires massacring people, you know, annexing nations and you know, whatever. You know, that's those kinds of discussions when they pop up, you know, in music or in, you know, it's that whole thing about art affecting the world. And I've said many times that artists, regardless of what form of art they are basically anti-establishment, because that's the nature of art. Art is supposed to be chaos. Art is supposed to, it points to beauty as much as it points to ugliness, you know?
Yeah, with art, specifically, I think with horror and metal in and of themselves, there's no rules. There are no rules. You don't have to follow any kind of code or any kind of rule book of any kind. You can do pretty much whatever you want, express yourself as deeply as you want, and allow that freedom and allow that influence and that inspiration to come out of you in whatever avenue you want to, whether it's art, music, acting, poetry, performing on stage, whatever you do, allow that to come out. And like a big theme that we've been talking about here is taking this anger, taking this passion, taking this paranoia and fear, manifest it into something positive and creative. And who knows, folks, you might just make some money doing it. You might just put a smile on somebody's face, and you might just have someone say, you know what? I feel the same way they do, and I'm glad I'm not alone.
Yeah, you know what? If you do it, you might write the next Peace Sells. You might make the next Escape from New York.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
You might do it. You never know.
All right, we're going to take a brief break here. Check out some of the other podcasts over at Project Entertainment Network. We come back. We're going to take a walk down to the mortuary, and we're going to go see what Walt's got cooking in the smoker, and we're going to take a ride in the DeGorean. How's that sound, kids?
Yeah.
Sure.
Three guys with beards.
The usual gang of idiots. That's me, Christopher Golden.
New York Times best-selling authors.
My name is Jim Moore.
Interviews with pop culture stars and creators.
So I'm Jonathan Mayberry.
And they don't talk about politics.
Course of Human Events.
Jesus, let's not talk about the Course of Human Events today.
I said they don't talk about politics.
I suspect we may bend our rule about no politics on the beards and talk about politics on the beards.
Didn't you say they don't talk about politics?
If somebody else says something, we should...
Thank you.
Anyone hear me? Am I all alone here?
Three guys with beards.
Tuesdays, exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
Hey, this is Joel Pierce, formerly of Brand New Sin, now known as Just Joe, and also the singer from Alpha Mountain. And you are listening to the Necrocasticon. Check it out!
Hi, this is Brian Keene. I'm an international best-selling, award-winning horror novelist.
No comment!
I know where the bodies are buried, and now I'm telling you their location every week on The Horror Show.
Fire no comment, don't you understand?
We discuss the latest news in horror novels, movies, comics, and games, and interview the biggest names in the business.
This interview is over. No comment!
Thursday nights at 7 p.m. only on
Project Entertainment Network.
Hey, this is Margarita Monet from Edge of Paradise, and you're listening to Necrocasticon.
Join us each Wednesday on the Mondo Method Podcast, brought to you by Project Entertainment Network. The Mondo Method Podcast features authors Armand Rosamilia and Chuck Buddha as they discuss the writing process from both the veteran and the novice perspectives. Each episode ends with a segment called Marketing Morsels, where expert publicist Aaron Sweet Al-Mahari teaches everyone how to promote their work and sell more books. Check us out on the Mondo Method Podcast on Project Entertainment Network.
Hey, Walter, what you got cooking in the smoker, Walter? What you making for us in the smoker this week, Walter? Did you put your spices on it, Walter? How long you got it in the smoker for, Walter? Should we eat it, Walter?
Uber Fanboy Reviews from...
Hey, Walter!
That smells pretty fucking good. What is it?
I'm getting hungry.
Walt, what you smell? What are you cooking down there, Walter?
Oh, we got a little bit of Raging Cajun going on right there, and some Texas barbecue.
It sounds like it's half asshole.
It's half dick.
I'm Philip Semlo. I'm a fucking dick.
A fucking dick.
Walt did about the new day.
Bill Moseley, Phil and Semlo, making music together. This is
making
pretty
music
dark and,
together.
This is pretty dark and disparate.
A little bit. Now before we go forward, this is not Phil's first foray into metal. Or not Phil, this is not Bill's first foray into metal, is what I mean. He did a little side project years ago. Well, first off, his soundbite was immortalized in Jerry Was a Race Car Driver by Primus with the Dollarville Hunt. That was not, for years, everyone thought that was Les. That is not Les. That is Bill Moseley. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Les does say it live, and he sounds just like Bill, but it is Bill. All right.
The Texas Chainsaw, too. You can even hear the chainsaw going in the background. It's a straight sample of the scene where they're going after Stretch in the radio station.
Yep. But he also did a little side project with Buckethead called Corn Bugs.
Yep.
Now, what Corn Bugs was...
I've got those videos, man. They are awesome.
Yeah. That's Bill Moseley as he's in the character of Chop Top when he's doing those songs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Not all of them.
Not all of them, but...
There's a few where, there's one where he's just butt naked wearing, a string of carrots around his crotch, and he's like, I am the vegetable man. I do whatever I can.
What's he trying to do? Matthew McConaughey?
Where he's, walking around his backyard talking about a dead rubber chicken and, just making up songs based on shit laying around his living room. It's one of the funniest things you could ever watch.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So how's this album? What's it called, first off?
All right, well, Bill and Phil, Sounds of Madness and...
Songs of Darkness and Despair.
Darkness and Despair, yes. All right.
Now, Phil actually, Bill mentioned this when we spoke to him.
He did. He talked about it when we interviewed him at Scarecon 2 years ago. A little over a year ago. This is, let's take Bill's character from House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, Otis Driftwood, decided to form a doom metal band. That's pretty much what it is.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's pretty much straightforward doom metal. I think Phil is just musically on the album, not vocally. All right. Because you don't hear Phil at all. It's all the vocals are Bill. And Bill is trying to invoke, Otis P. Driftwood is trying to invoke his best Ozzy Osbourne, Sabbath era.
So he's basically pulling a Fozzy.
Pretty much. You take that and you throw in all the weird, morbid sense of humor that Bill Moseley and his characters are known for. And that's what you get with it.
So there's songs on here called Skullfuck and Necrophilia?
No, more like Corpus Christi and Dirty Eye. There's a song on here called Dirty Eye.
Yes, that's going to be my favorite song, I know.
That's the opening track, actually. Dirty Eye, it's five tracks. Dirty Eye, Corpus Christi, Catastrophic, Tonight's the Night We Die, and Bad Donut.
I bet you Tonight's the Night We Die is going to end up being a wedding song
for somebody.
I believe that's the ballad on the record. I'm not kidding.
Oh god, somebody will dance to it,
and then my friend, you die.
So, but, do you recommend the album?
Yeah, sure. If you like doom metal, if you're a fan of Bill Moseley, definitely. If you're a fan of doom metal, sure. I mean, it's not a groundbreaking thing. It's a cool, you know, it's got that cool, sadistic, evil hillbilly vibe to it that Bill Moseley's characters are known for. And it's got some pretty neat doom metal riffs, and Phil playing lead guitar.
Really? So
is it more of a novelty, or does it stand up?
I want to say half and half. I mean, like I said, it's not going to shatter any glass ceilings. The music is pretty standard and doomy, you know, sludge metal. Like I said, if you're a fan of Bill Moseley, I pick it up. I think you'd enjoy it. If you enjoyed Corn Bugs, you would enjoy this. It's got that weird, morbid sense of humor that is found in those records. It's definitely not going to make my best of the year list. I can tell you that right now. And the main reason why this is being reviewed tonight is the original album that was being reviewed tonight was Creator, the brand new one. But however, it doesn't come out till tomorrow as of this recording. So I'm like, fuck, I got to find something. And I came across this. We knew about this. Cool, you know.
I thought you were going to say your player 8, your CD or something.
The Creator hasn't been released yet.
Just got miles of plastic. I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. Max,
not a lot of Phil though. I mean, I was kind of hoping for Phil and a Phil and Somo Chop Top duet. I think that would have been kind of fun.
I think the album should have been called Otis Down.
Otis Down.
Speaking of going down, come here, Max.
Dude, is that a reindeer?
I don't know, but
it looks. And wolf pelts. What is going on?
I don't know. Let's go down to the mortuary. What the fuck, man?
Wait!
There's seagulls.
Look at the grass.
There's seagulls.
Look at the grass.
It's time for Mordecai's mortuary.
Yeah, but look at the grass. It's blue.
Rock, run so far away.
No. Hold on, you got any Alka Seltzer?
Let's go find that.
Run.
That sounds cool. Church.
Yeah, it does. That kind of rocks.
Steven Seagulls. Steve and Seagulls.
George Seagull.
I can take on Steven Seagal. I get it now.
Yep, exactly.
They're living weapons.
It's from my wife, Fuck You and Die. Favorite line from that movie.
Didn't mention I'm a cop. This band, like we were talking about them a bit before the show started, you know, these guys, it's a kind of a novelty thing, but, you know, the thing I like about a band that does covers is that they can do covers in an original way, in a way that is completely removed from the original version. It's the reason I hate Joan Jett's The Hits, The Hits List, whatever that album is, you know, because it's just her doing perfect straight radio covers of classic songs. There's no Joan Jett in any of those songs, you know. These guys are taking these songs and making them completely different, doing metal songs, bluegrass, fucking polka, whatever, you know. There's much more of a musicianship involved in this, I think, than, you know, kind of Weird Ailing it, just rewriting lyrics in a funny way or something, you know. In a non-metal vein, there's a band called Postmodern Jukebox that I'm huge.
Oh yes, me too.
As well,
I got turned on to them by their cover of How You Remind Me from Nickelback.
My personal favorite, because I love her voice, is Haley Reinhart doing Creep with them, Radiohead's Creep. I love Haley Reinhart's voice. She really gets this kind of sultry, like 30s, 40s lounge singer thing, you know, like that Fever kind of style singing. And I appreciate stuff like that because it doesn't take a lot to just copy what you've heard. It takes, you know, it takes a unique ear to say, hey, I want to do this as a bluegrass song in a waltz time. You know, there's more creativity involved there. So it's much more respectable. And these guys do some amazing stuff. I haven't heard a single bad cover from them so far. So I would definitely endorse Steve and Seagulls. Look them up on YouTube.
We just mentioned in the same paragraph, I guess you could say, Nickelback and Radiohead. And I find
yes, you did.
Funny that that was brought up in succession.
And
like
nobody
that
crashed.
Yeah, nobody balked at that.
Radiohead is the Nickelback of England. They really are. Okay, they've got two hits. And the rest
they got
of
a singer
songs,
named Thom.
And the rest of their songs make Coldplay look good. Okay? That's how bad.
No,
fucking
no, nothing
Radiohead
makes Coldplay look good.
No, nothing does.
Not even a surgical 2x4.
That's how bad Radiohead
is. I can't be saved.
I can't stand
it. It was all yellow.
That's going to get it in.
No, it's not. Because we're
hating on
both of those
back when they were called they sucked then too.
So we got that car all tuned up and ready to go there, Max.
It's all ready to go, guys. So this week, Walt, you're going shotgun with me. You're going to come up front. Oz, Walt, Tom, get in the back, but play nice. All right. And
actually, Max, before you turn the ignition, I was just going to ask something. Don't you guys want to talk about what horror movies I saw just recently?
Oh, yes, for my...
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
it's cold out.
If you guys do that, I'm going to figure out where the hell we've been sitting because DeLorean's only got two seats.
Yeah, really?
No, I modified. It's the DeGorean. I modified it.
It's a hearse version of the DeLorean.
Yeah, but it's cold, so I got to let it warm up a little bit. So go ahead, Walt. Plenty of time.
Sorry, lots of small
I got two big ones we got to talk about.
Okay, sure I got two big ones, too.
big ones right here! Right here!
That's what she said.
When they're held for pleasure, they're the balls that I like that.
First and foremost, I did actually make the pitch in through some money. And watched on pay-per-view because it's still sort of in theaters. It's not anywhere near release on DVD yet. One of the last anticipated horror films of 2016. This is one of those movies that was raved about by Stephen King, and that is The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yeah, I talked about it. That was on my top 10 list last year.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I finally saw it. And
what did you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a above average, good, straightforward haunted house story.
Did they find out her name?
No. Oops. Spoiler.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Well, when you watch the trailer, you can pretty much spoil it. The trailer spoils the plot to you.
Yeah,
the twist. The twist, if you go into it without seeing the trailer, I think the twist is a little more jarring.
Yeah.
When you realize what the fuck's going on.
What's going on.
Yeah.
So they BVS'd it, huh?
Yeah, it was unfortunately
great. Lots of nudity. I mean, dead woman nudity, but, you know.
Yeah, right. That's the best game.
You got to take what you can work with, you know, and then put some leaves.
There's websites for that, guys. Websites.
Yeah.
So you also recommend Autopsy of Jane Doe as well?
The Autopsy of Jane Doe does get my recommendation. It's creepy. It's creepy. It's a bit gory. It's got some pretty scary scenes in it, and
it's got Brian Cox in it, motherfucker.
It's got Brian fucking Cox, the original Hannibal Lecter.
Isn't it kind of a given though to say that a movie with the word autopsy in the title is going to be a little gory?
Yeah,
well, it's gory in different aspects. It's also violent, you know.
Yeah.
Not only no,
it's very violent.
The other film I watched was a recommendation of our previous guest, Mr. Mike Duke. It was a film from director, I can't remember the director's name. He directed, Anyways, the movie's called Goddess of Love.
is that the movie with Vanna White in it?
No, it's not that one.
Wow.
the woman in this movie is far more fucking beautiful than Vanna White. I will tell you, the girl's a knockout. Her name, the actress's name is Alexis Kendra, which somewhat sounds like an adult film star name, but whatever.
Yes, it does.
Sounds very made up.
It does sound very made up. But in the movie,
I'm going to take my two best friends' names, and that's going to be my stage name.
I'm going to take my puppy's name and my middle name, and that's going to be my full name when I get in the business.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty straightforward plot. She portrays a stripper named Venus. You know, but that's a real name, though, in the movie. That's a real name. That's not her stripper name. And she's kind of new at the whole stripper thing. She used to be a dancer in France. So something bad happened over there. So she had to go back to the States and take a job as an exotic dancer. And she meets a client and falls in love with him, which, you know, usually spells disaster, even in real life. And she's head over heels in love with this guy. And it turns out that this guy is fucking another woman behind her back. And right from there, we go to Splatterpunk City. And that's what this movie pretty much is. It's a splatterpunk film. Good example of human paranoia and human and you know how much the human psyche can fuck with you. Nice little twist at the end for the film. Also, you kind of the girl. Not only is she beautiful, she gives a hell of a performance. She's a pretty good actress, and she gives off a vibe where you actually do feel horrible for her, despite the fact that she's killing cats and stalking ex-girlfriends and
she's
stabbing
killing
the fuck
cats.
Out of
I'm all down with that, man.
Yeah,
she's killing me.
She's killing cats. So
I kill a cat.
Yeah,
cat killer.
I kill cats in all my fiction, dude.
Cat killer.
Basically, how did I say it on my page? It's Play Misty for Me, splatterpunk style.
Nice.
Yeah. And you can find the Autopsy on Jane Doe right now if you have it's on IFC Midnight, which is basically their pay-per-view format for films that are still in theaters and such. God's to Love, you can find to watch for free on Amazon Prime.
Oh,
and okay. And what both these movies have in common, there is a shit ton of nudity in both of them.
Right. Awesome.
Titties.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
All right. Speaking of titties, just getting the
gore. One's got dead titties, the other one doesn't.
Tits and butts and tits and butts and tits and butts and tits and butts.
I can't listen to techno music anymore thanks to that video. All I hear is boots and cats now. Like even when I was watching John Wick the last time, I'm sitting there watching this fight scene while it's going on. I'm sitting there going boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots. Boots, 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 boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats. Damn.
All right, Max,
get away from it.
Oh, quick shout out, John Wick chapter 2 is coming out. I cannot fucking wait.
I know. Neither can I.
That's coming out soon, yes. Isn't that like Matrix Part 9?
No.
Because it's Keanu and Lawrence Fishburne again.
These movies make the Matrix look like the runoff from your dad's nut. You know what I mean?
I saw the commercial. I'm like, it's Keanu and Lawrence Fishburne again.
John Wick movies are John Woo movies, not directed by John Woo.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what they are.
There you go. All right, gentlemen, let's climb on in here. Chill out. Relax. I've got this thing nice and warmed up. Flux capacitor is in full blow right now, so no time like the present.
All right, it's full of blow.
Yeah, full of blow, yes.
Free cocaine for everyone.
Kayfabe. All right, no time like the present to go into the past. A little Revelation 13 is going to help us go into the past right now. It's time for a little metal and horror history, so let's get to it. On the date, January 24th, albums that came out on that day in the past. We go back to 1989. We got a doubleheader right here. Two albums came out on that day in 1989. First would be Dark Angel's third album called Leave Scars. And Skid Row released their debut self-titled album on the same day. And another album that came out on that day in 2012, Lamb of God released the album Resolution. Couple of movies for you, too, to come out on January 24th. In 2014, another doubleheader for you, that the movie I, Frankenstein was released. And the same day, the movie May I Kill You was released as well.
No, you may not. No, you may not.
Thank you. I'm putting that question out there. Nobody answered. Celebrating birthdays on January 24th, we want to say happy birthday to bassist for Dream Theater, John Myung, and singer from Halloween, Michael Kiske. John Myung, born in 1967. Michael Keese, born in 1968.
Great bass player. One of the best.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Not a bass big player. Fan of that band, but man, I would sit in front of this guy for a lesson any day of the week.
If you have absolutely nothing to do for a day, you can listen to one of their albums.
If you're stuck in an elevator and you're not getting cell reception, maybe.
But Myung is one of those guys who can keep a good groove, but he also knows when to fill the gaps and do some amazing stuff on the bass with the use of
the best
tones and all that stuff. Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
He plays like an 8-string bass, too.
Something like that, yeah. He was one of the predecessors playing the 6-string on a constant basis, and he just had to grow because Petrucci got the 7-string and then went on from there. It's just, man, it just never ended with that band. Okay, moving on to January 25th now. We talked about this little release right here a couple weeks ago. We talked solely about the year 1994. And on that day, January 25th, 1954, Alice in Chains released the EP Jar of Flies. On that very same day in 2006, our old buddies Motley Crue received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Got a couple of movies for you that were released on January 25th, both in 2013. One is Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters, and the other is John Dies at the End. Spoiler alert. Celebrating birthday on January 25th, we want to say a very happy birthday to director Toby Hooper, who was born on that day in 1943.
I call him one-hit wonder Hooper.
You'll want to include the Billy Idol song, the Billy Idol video?
He's legitimately only got like 2 or 3 good movies, in my opinion.
Hey, when you've done the movies he's done, you don't have to do anything else, really.
Oh, without a doubt. Certainly. So, you know, there's a point where you just kind of got to look at it and go, yep, I already did it. You know.
Been there, done that, I'm done. Been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, made the t-shirt, sold the t-shirt, made the money.
Yep.
Moving on now. Like
I created Leatherface. I'm good. Yeah.
I'm done. Come at me, bro.
I Moving scared on. Children for the rest of fucking eternity. That's
January 20, yeah. January 26th, a few albums that were released on January 26th. We'll go back to 1988 as David Lee Roth released his second studio album, Skyscraper.
This must be just like living in paradise.
Thanks for yelling that.
Awful. Eat 'em and Smile didn't leave my cassette deck for months. Mm-hmm. I got that album there, and I was like, what?
This is Susie Susio for crying out loud! Uh-huh. Hot dog and a shake.
Well, it basically set the trend that any solo album from any band from this point forward was going to suck. You know what I mean? And that continued for like 15 years, I think. If somebody went solo from a band, the album just tanked.
That's what we think of Skyscraper, folks. Moving on to 1994, we're back to 1994 once again, because on that day, 1994, Dio released Strange Highways. And that same day in 2010, Fozzy is back, folks, as they released the album Chasing the Grail.
Waka waka.
Waka waka.
Waka.
Who wants to hear a funny-ass joke? Waka waka. Movie release for you on that day in 2013, the movie Zombie Night was released. And celebrating birthdays on January 26th, we say a happy birthday to Mr. Edward Van Halen, who was born in 1955 on that day, and Mr. Tom Kiefer of Cinderella, who was born on that day in 1961.
I legitimately thought Tom Kiefer was a fucking fairly attractive woman for about 2 years.
Was a woman, yeah.
Yes, I think that's the reason. He's basically got Angelina Jolie's lips, which kind of makes his face usable in a way.
He's
got him in a jar in his basement.
A very, very drunk and desperate person.
I'm just picturing lips now in a jar in a basement. Sorry. Moving on. January 28th.
Sing Shake Me. Sing Shake Me.
Sing Shake Me. Somebody sing Shake Me, please. Or don't know what you got till it's gone. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Walt. Sing out the window, okay? All right. January 28th, a couple of movies that released on this day, both in 2005. We got a lot of double headers going on this week. The first movie was called Creep, and the second movie was called Hide and Seek. And we've got some birthdays to celebrate on January 28th.
Wait a minute, which hide and seek? There's two of them. Is it hide and seek or hide and seek?
Hide and seek.
Oh, so that's the one about the dead musician coming back with the record. sells his soul. I think Robert Englund's in it.
I think that's Trick or Treat.
Well, I think Walt's
Black,
right.
Black Rose. I think it's Black Rose. I don't know. I'm confused.
I hate it when movies do this. Continue.
Okay, you figure it out. You get on your phone while I'm driving. You figure, I can't drive and text at the same time here. So, celebrating birthdays on January 28th, we want to say happy birthday to Uriah Heep's own David Byron, who was born on that day in 1947. We want to say happy birthday to Tom. I can never say this last name right, so forgive me. Tom Erdelyi. That's the real name. We know him better as Tommy Ramone, who was born on that day in 1949. And I want to say happy birthday to former lead guitarist of Anthrax, Dan Spitz, who was born on that day in 1963.
With the band of 6 months.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Yep. And did get some lifts in his shoes, because that guy was short.
He's tiny, yeah.
Very tiny.
Peter Dinklage, that one.
I think he was like, I think he might have been as tall or maybe an inch taller than Danzig.
Wow.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, little guys.
5'3", 5'1", and that was it.
Now I just want to reshoot all of Danzig's music videos with Peter Dinklage.
I'll picture it now.
Could you imagine him in Speedos doing the Dirty Black Summer video?
Oh, God. My God. Or actually, Max, you remember the Until You Call in the Dark video where he's wearing a gimp mask?
Yes! Oh, my God. Oh,
man.
I'm going to wipe out here. I'm laughing too hard. Let's. And as I bring this back into the home base here, ladies and gentlemen, rounding out this week in metal and horror history, January 30th, 2015, the movie Fear Clinic was released. And that right there is your metal and horror history for this week. Hope you have a good week and make some history of your own.
All right, this is the point where I'm going to remind you, you can sponsor the NecroCasticon or any of the Project Entertainment Network podcasts. Just email armandrosamelia@gmail.com. That's how he rolls. Go to the website, projectentertainment.com, and you can click on the advertising banner there, and you can learn how to do it for that as well.
Projectentertainment.com or projectentertainmentnetwork.com?
Projectentertainmentnetwork.com, sir. Sorry, sir.
I want to make sure.
You think I'm funny, Private
How
Snowball?
How tall are you, boy?
I'm here to war cry. Ah!
All right. Also, we got Patreon. If you don't have a business, you can help us on Patreon. www.patreon.com/projectentnet. E-N-T-N-E-T. Because Project Entertainment Network is too long for it. We're also on all the podcasting outlets you can think of: iTunes, Stitcher, Roku, iHeartRadio, Amazon, Google Play. We're everywhere. Find us. Subscribe to us. Comment on us. Do all that stuff. I'm at TokenBottom_Tom on Twitter, TheTokenTom on Facebook. The podcast is Necrocasticon on Facebook, Necrocasticon on Instagram, and at Necrocasticon on the Twitter. What about you, Max?
Find me on the Twitter at TheMaxAxe. That's TheMaxAxe. And I'm also at that on Instagram as well.
What about you, Walter?
You can find me on Twitter at YourWaltHades, or you can also follow me on Instagram at Smokin_Walt_Hades and watch and look at pictures of food. Also, while you're at it, go on to my film watching project page, 365 movies in 365 days on Facebook. It was just starting out to be a little small thing for my do for myself, and I've got well over 120 followers on that page now, which is, you know, for somebody who's just watching movies, that's pretty good.
Azriel?
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, DeviantArt, LO, and all that other stuff by looking for Azriel Mordecai or Blue the Shark. Or you can find me on Grindr by looking for Scooter McBigdick.
Okay.
There's a lot of accounts on Grindr.
Yes. So until next week, I am Token Tom for Max X and for Walt Hades and the incomparable Azriel Mordecai. We are collectively the Necrocasticon, and we're the fuck out of here, keeps. Peace.
Bye.
The Necrocasticon is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network and is written and produced by Thomas Clark, Scott Groveston, Walter Ball, and Azriel Mordecai. Music provided by The Night Keep, written by Daniel Edenfield.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.